welcome to the Chronic Podcast. I'm your host, Ralph Marlboro. It's the middle of the week, so that means we are joined by our fearless leader, Dave Cariello, from Canal Street Chronicles, Vice Chairman, President Emeritus, and Kevin Held, contributor to Canal Street Chronicles and runner of Hakeem Drops the Ball. And
Hakeem Drops the Blog, yeah.
I'm totally off my game because Drew Brees just completely shitting the bed on Thursday has thrown everything in my world off. Kevin, Twitter melted down when Drew Brees had his brain fart at the end of the first half, which was basically the first major clock fuck up at all that the Saints have ever had since he's been quarterback. And I got to thinking, you know, that never happened when Sean Payton was on the sideline, but like the rest of us, Sean Payton was watching the game at home or somewhere. Do you think he completely flipped out, or did he just look to the ceiling and shake his fist and go, "Good job!"
I'm of the belief that Sean Payton did not get to see the game. I think, if anything, he was staring at a pair of ass cheeks in front of him. I think maybe the gal might have gotten to see the game, maybe that play in question, but I think any of her yelling might have just been misinterpreted.
Oh, Lord. So what you're saying is basically Sean Payton, the whole...
I'm saying that there might have been some reverse cowgirl action going on.
He's not,
okay, that's what I'm saying.
He's not watching game. He's just, the bros would say, the under 22-year-old guys would say, he's just crushing it all season long. Is that what you're saying?
Yep. Yep.
Dave, I think the Saints' playoff chances are the equivalent of your 110-year-old aunt who's in the hospital and the family's gathered around and they're just waiting for her to die. What is left in the 2012 season that has you really interested in the games?
Oh, nothing. Nothing at all. Season's over. We're really just, you know, the rest is just real life practice. I would say I really don't think the Saints have anything to play for. I don't think that they're going to make the playoffs. And you know, I'm not always a Debbie Downer kind of guy, and I'm trying not to be here. But I mean, I just think that's some straight talk for you, because I know there are a lot of delusional as fuck Saints fans out there, and every day there seems like they've got sunshine flying out of their ass, and that's just not the case in this situation. The Saints are a mediocre team. They've got a mediocre record. They'll finish with a mediocre record. I definitely want the Saints to keep winning. I mean, I enjoy Saints games much more when they win as compared to when they lose. But, you know, they've got a tough challenge against New York. So, but what do we have to watch for? Is that just really and truly, I guess, to give like a real answer to your question, I mean, it would be nice to see continued improvement from the defense. As I wrote last week, the defense has been trending in a very good direction as far as yards allowed, and it's gotten progressively better each week for the last 6-7 weeks. So I would definitely love to see that. They can't keep getting better. I mean, because at some point they'd have to give up like 10 yards a game, which is just obviously impossible. But I would at least like to see them plateau at under 300 yards. That'd be great. And turnovers and all that kind of stuff. So that's what I'd like to say. And Drew Brees, not the shit of it. I don't think that's asking for much.
Kevin, Drew Brees has always had these sort of interception binges. You know, if you chart him throughout the time when he's been with the Saints, he usually has two or three game stretches every year. Even the Super Bowl year, he had the bad game against Dallas and the bad game against Tampa. But this two game stretch here with the 7 picks, where does it rank in the sort of the bad Drew Brees file? Is it at the top of the pile? Is it in the middle?
Oh, it is. It has been to the top of the mountain. It has seen the mountaintop.
I mean, it's the most in one game, so why shouldn't it be at the top of the mountain?
But I'm talking
right. I mean,
if you put the two games together.
I mean, that's his worst. That's not only the most interceptions he threw, but I think that's the lowest quarterback rating of his career.
Well,
so
I was talking the two games together, though. I mean, if you put them together, is it his worst like stretch of games he's ever had?
Because it's like, yeah, Drew had a bad game in the Super Bowl year, you said the Tampa game, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, but that game was still winnable. If Garrett Hartley makes that field goal at the end,
yeah, that's true.
The game's still won. If Drew Brees does not throw two pick sixes, the Saints are winning that game. I mean, hell, if he doesn't throw that first pick six at the end of the first half, you know, I think we're all in agreement that the complexity of the game changes and that the Saints probably win. I mean, if Drew Brees doesn't throw all five of those interceptions against Atlanta, the Saints may have a shot. If he only throws three, you know?
It would be a question of which three, I suppose.
Yeah.
The back
you know, I mean,
rate.
You could probably say, you know, well, Lance Moore, you know, if Lance Moore catches that ball or if Jimmy Graham doesn't have that boneheaded offensive pass interference call on the other touchdown grab or the touchdown run, then the interceptions wouldn't be necessary.
It's interesting with the Saints this year as they've dug themselves out of the hole. And
you know what would be really cool? It would be really cool. I'm sorry to interrupt you, Ron. It would be really cool if each game, each team gets one mulligan. They get like one do-over down. You know, it's like, you know, you're playing the game and you have a bad play, like the Jimmy Graham thing, and you can pick and choose whatever you want to use it, but that's the one that you get to do it over again. It's like the play never happened, no penalties, no nothing, no yardage gained, no yardage lost, nothing. You get one play, you know, and it would kind of become schematical because then coaches would have to be like, you know, because if you think about it, if there's one play that you can change, it could potentially change the entire outcome of the game. I mean,
it would be like the blue flag. It'd be like you throw the
right, exactly. It'd be like a blue flag, and it's like, nope, didn't happen. Sorry. I mean, that's it, though. You don't get to do that ever again throughout the course of the game. I mean, you know, like I think if you did that last week, I think if you did that in the first interception, maybe you'd do that over, or maybe you'd throw it on the last play before the half, and maybe you get to do that over again so you don't throw the pass over the middle to Darren Sproles. But I think that would be kind of interesting. Obviously, that would be a huge game changer. I think that would be an interesting thing
You know what could make that even more interesting is don't even give it once a game. Give a team
once a season?
Once a quarter.
I was thinking, what if you had one for just the entire season? What if one play for an entire season you could do over? You know, that could still change the outcome of a game, which in turn could change the outcome of like the playoff seeding or anything like that. I just thought of that, but that would be quite an interesting if they had some sort of extra flag and you get a do-over.
Yeah, well, once a quarter for the year, so that you'd get like one every four.
Oh, one every four games. Oh, yeah, right. There you go. That'd be interesting. Either way.
So like you'd be like in the middle of the year, be like, oh, should he use the blue flag for that one? That would be mind blowing. But I don't think you could have the blue flag in the playoffs though. You have to just leave it for regular season. But I think it would be great because you'd have like Kevin, you'd have like Lovey Smith throwing the red flag and the blue flag in the combo and just the mayhem
at the same time. And it would be in the first quarter of the first game of the year.
Lovey Smith wants to do the kickoff of the season opener again.
Oh, you know some jackass coach would attempt an onside kick to start the second half. And then he would
flag it.
And then if they didn't get it, they'd flag it and just redo it.
Oh, man. But the thing is, though, the thing is that that could haunt you as a team because you could make this great play and another team could blue flag you and you'd be like, fuck, they blue flagged us. Lance Moore just went 80 yards on a reverse and fucking Mike Smith blue flagged it. God damn it. Dave, I read on Pro Football Focus that Malcolm Jenkins has missed 20 tackles already, and the record apparently for safety is 24. So.
Typical, of course.
Typical. So.
I'm not surprised. I'm actually more surprised that Roman Harper isn't at the top of that list. I'm surprised Jenkins is higher than Harper.
Well, I was
actually no, I'm not. I take it back. I'm not surprised.
I was actually comforted today that they were like, Roman Harper, he's got hurt ribs. He didn't practice today. Because that made me go, oh, yeah, that's kind of maybe why he's been really, really awful at missing tackles the last 2 or 3 weeks. But this safety combination, Dave, the thing with the salary cap with the Saints is they can't really make any moves and do an upgrade. They could get rid of them and scourge through the bargain bin. But are they so bad that you've just got to be like, fuck it, we got to get somebody else? Or do you keep them for next year? What do you do at safety?
Well, I mean, I don't think either of them are bad. I mean, like with Roman Harper particularly, I mean, he's just not – he's not a coverage safety kind of guy. He's a blitzing safety. He's a thumper. So if you don't, like, move him to linebacker, like I know some people have suggested, which isn't the worst idea in the world, I don't think, but I just think you got to know who you have and use them and optimize their value and what they're, you know, have them do more of what they're good at and less of what they're not good at. So, I mean, I hate to say just remove Roman Harper altogether when he's good at blitzing and that kind of stuff. But, yeah, I mean, as far as all-around safeties go, neither Jenkins or Harper, you know, they're no Darren Sharper. They, you know, they're just not elite. They're not elite safeties. They're not great safeties. I'd say they're good safeties, but should you replace them? Yeah, if you have an opportunity to get somebody better, I'd say at least get somebody in there to compete with them.
Kevin?
Repeat that last part.
Safeties. Keep them, get rid of them, burn them at the stake. What do you do?
Well, I mean, didn't we... I believe it was a podcast that I heard earlier in the week. A couple of scalawags by the name of Andrew and Ralph,
yeah,
who were saying that because of the way that the defense had been playing under Spagnuolo, that they've gotten better, and that arguably if they keep playing this way, you know, why would you throw anybody out and bring somebody in? I mean,
yeah, but that was Monday, Kevin. This is Wednesday.
I mean, I'm still in favor. I mean, look, I'm still in favor of using the draft to get a defensive player. So I'm not about. Oh God, maybe you get rid of Vilma. Maybe you get rid of Vilma because, I mean, isn't he going to be worth a lot of money?
Well, yeah, I think on the short list of players to go is Vilma. I think Will Smith, if he doesn't renegotiate.
Ironically, with the two bounty gig suspended players, I think it's funny that they've pretty much played the entire season.
It is.
And still haven't gotten suspended. And by the time they actually suspend them, the season will be over and we're going to wind up getting rid of them. So win for the Saints there.
Well, that brings me to a great segue, Dave. If I would have told you In you know, when all these suspensions came down, the over-under on games missed by Vilma and Will Smith would have been zero in December, what would your reaction to that have been?
Well, you'd have my money, I'll tell you that. You know, you'd have every dime of it. I wouldn't have believed you. And I'm still, you know, it's looking like maybe he'll get suspended for like two games or something like that. We still don't even know. But it's definitely possible he never gets suspended this year. And personally, I think it just makes the NFL look a little dumb. And in retrospect, it also means that the only two bad things to come out of that Downey Gate are the the bad publicity that the organization has suffered and the loss of their coach.
And a second-round pick. So our two second-round picks.
Okay, you're right. I forgot about that. You're right. That is bad, too. But as far as this season, you know, I think the only thing that's made this that's affected this season negatively as far as Bountygate is the loss of Sean Payton.
Well, Kevin, if you, you know, I, you know, Dave was pretty Debbie Downer, and I am too. Look, the Saints aren't making the playoffs. I don't even think they're getting 8-8. I think if they win two of the last four, win the home games, that's about as much as we can expect. But
Wait a minute. On Twitter, you were blasting me 2 days ago for saying, why was I being negative? You were all like, no, the playoffs are still possible. I was the one saying, you're humoring us. By putting us on that stupid graphic about playoff possibilities, and you come after me like, "How are you being negative?"
It's possible. It's still well. I think that was before Washington won Monday, which really kind of made one more team at the Washington winning Monday, Kevin. It bumped the Saints off the graphic.
That was during the game. Well, that's because it's ESPN. and ESPN has its own narrative to follow.
Man, that's true. Plus one for you there. But when we write the obituary of the 2012 season and we like it all fucking went wrong and we divvy up sort of responsibility and blame, how much of it is Sean Payton not being there? How much of it is defense sucking? How much of it is Drew Brees being horrible in the two biggest games of the year? How do you divvy – if you had to rank them 1, 2, 3, what would the rankings be?
I think that I would say Peyton not being there is number one. I would probably say that Peyton number one, the defense sucking two, and – the backup coach is not being quality. Number three for sure.
Dave, how would you rank it?
I would basically just say that Sean Payton's absence makes up for 75% of the Saints sucking, and the defense makes up for the other 25% of the Saints sucking. I mean, the way I look at it is like, you know, the goal of every season is obviously to win the Super Bowl, but before that it's to get to the playoffs. And I think that the reason I give Sean Payton 75% is I think if Sean Payton's there, I think the Saints have a much better record. I think they win quite a few of the games that they wind up losing. You know, the Kansas City Chiefs, the Atlanta one that we just saw. So I think their record's completely different. I think they make the playoffs. And then, you know, once you're in the playoffs, anything can happen. And every season, that's really all I look toward is, okay, will this team make the playoffs? I just want to see them in the playoffs, and then we'll just take it from there. It's the second season, sort of. I never would have thought I'd be saying this, and I've said this a million times, and I've repeated it a million times, but I really thought this team would kind of just keep on keeping on without Sean Payton, but I was dead wrong.
Kevin, the Saints, to me, they've sort of become the Jim Haslett Saints in a way where there's just sort of this not to off the field madness, but the sort of you don't know what you're going to get week to week. They're sort of sloppy on their details. You know, I just think they miss Sean Payton, and it's hard to quantify what he brings, except for like the clock bugaboo and the special teams penalties, which they've had a ton of. You know, in negotiations with the Saints, is there any way that the Saints have any leverage in this at all?
No, absolutely. Peyton can go in and say, look, you need me to be on that sideline. And so, obviously, he's got the leverage, but at the same time, he will be talking and dealing with a man who decided that it's a good name for a basketball team is Pelicans. So, you know.
I knew that was coming up.
It could be like talking to Chinese drywall. I don't know.
So let's go off topic here. You were very anti-Pelican. I'm not very anti-Pelican. I like the World's Fair in 84. I have a little ceramic Pelican from the 1984 World's Fair. So I'm kind of pro Pelican. Does that mean we can't be friends anymore? What nickname did you want the Hornets to be?
The fucking Jazz, man. I mean, we can go get it from fucking Utah. Utah needs to just fucking give it up and realize there's no fucking Jazz in Utah. As far as I know, there's no music in Utah.
I don't even think they have black people in Utah.
I don't think they do.
They got one guy. They got one guy.
Cole Malone? No, he doesn't live there anymore. No, but you.
Great timing with the Carl Malone joke. Timely.
Yeah, but I mean the Jazz. I mean, of the options that they had, unless they're gonna like cut the Jazz like a $20 million check. I mean, the options were like Voodoo and Crew and the New Orleans Bounce, which I kind of liked, but white people over 35 would have been really, really confused.
It would have worked. It would have worked in an NBA.
That sounds like a WNBA.
It does.
Ooh, yeah. I don't know. I was getting an ABA vibe, but I can see WNBA.
And I liked one that was, if you really want to go like retro, old school, New Orleans, you could have gone Buccaneers, which was the old pro team from the 60s that couldn't pay their bills and would bounce checks. So that would have been possible. But Dave, are you pro, anti Pelican? Where do you fall in that?
I don't know, man. I mean, you know, it's cool because it's very representative of our state and all that, but and it's on the flag. But it's just not, you know, it's hard to be really afraid of a pelican. They can be really mean. In real life, pelicans can really get at you. But I probably, if we're throwing out like names that we would have rather have, personally, and I know Drew Brees just said this on Facebook today or Twitter or whatever, but and I already mentioned this but before Drew Brees did, but I would have liked the Brass. But I know that was the minor league hockey team that was here when I first arrived in New Orleans. I know Drew probably does not know that, so he doesn't realize that they would never make the team the Brass probably because that was the hockey team that was here before. But I would have been okay with that, and I would have thought that would have been kind of cool. I think that's a cool name, a little double entendre there. But the Pelican, I mean, I think the problem is that it's three syllables. You know, it's long. It's not like a long word when you look at it, to fit on a jersey or anything like that, but it is three syllables, and I mean, go around all the teams around the NBA and tell me how many teams have three-syllable names. I don't know how many there are, if any.
Yeah, and it's kind of hard to chant.
It doesn't really roll off the tongue.
It's
kind of
hard to chant, too. You can't really chant. Pelican. It's like it'd have to be like a slow chant. Kind of like Daryl. Daryl.
I mean, but I mean, technically, I really can't say anything bad about it because the Pelican is the mascot of Tulane, the current mascot. We have a Pelican called Riptide.
Uh-huh.
So I really know
that was coming up. That was a surefire thing.
I hope.
Well, I mean, the Tulane's going to dominate all in the Big East. I mean, it's just a matter of time.
Honestly, I'm hoping that they make it to the Big 12. Honestly, I'm hoping that they make another switch to the Big 12 before they even play a game in the Big East. That may be a little hopeful, but...
You want to see Tulane against Oklahoma.
Oh, my God.
I've seen it a couple of places, people saying that is still a possibility.
Oh, my Lord.
Not out of the question.
Well, you know what, though?
The Big 12 won't be what the Big 12 as you know it. Like, if Tulane enters the Big 12, then the Big 12 as you know it now would not really be the Big 12. So, meaning when you say it now, when you say, oh, Tulane's in the Big 12, like, that just sounds improbable and impossible. And, you know, it sounds like Tulane would be way outmatched. But by the time Tulane got there, I think the landscape of the Big 12 looks completely different, and maybe it's not as impressive.
Well, that's true, but you know what? At least if they had the Big 12, if it's close to what it is now, at least they could really fill their stadium, because teams would love to come to New Orleans and dump truck the wave and party in the French Quarter. But, you know, but I like Curtis Johnson. So, Dave, you are you sound like you're catatonic over these last four games.
Do I?
You kind of, a little bit. But they're playing a team from your home birthplace area. So how important is it for you, for all your family and far-flung members, that the Saints kick the shit out of the Giants? How high does that rate importance to you?
Well, I know it's definitely, it's always nice. I do have a couple of friends that are big-time Giants fans, and it's especially fun because one of my friends who's a big-time Giants fan is also one of those guys who just, like, completely melts down when his team does bad. You know, like, you can't even talk to him. So it's always especially fun when the Saints beat the Giants, and they're 4-0 in the Drew Brees era against the Giants. So I'm a little optimistic that maybe they'll make it 5-0, but I would say really they probably do. But I put this on Canal Street Chronicles Facebook page, but every Friday, and I don't know, I think you guys are fans of that, but you probably saw this, but every Friday the Giants, they have a tradition since Strahan's been playing since their first Super Bowl year, I think. Or maybe like 2008. Every Friday they eat pizza from Umberto's on Long Island. They actually have it delivered all the way to Jersey. And it's a tradition, and a lot of the players are into it. I think it's sort of like superstition. Well, I happen to go to school and grow up with the family that owns Umberto's. And so I put in a word and I said, look, do you think you guys could, like, you know, maybe not deliver this pizza this week? So we'll see. I've got that on our side. I'm working that angle. We'll see what happens. I'm hoping maybe they won't get their pizza this Friday, and that'll bring good luck to the thing.
Well, Dave, if that happens, it'll be on Twitter, and I think if that does happen, you would deserve a game ball. Can you agree with me there, Kevin?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, that's easily. I mean, this would then be, I mean, you would essentially be the blogger equivalent of Lawrence Taylor sending hookers and blow to an opposing player's hotel room.
Always in good company there. That'd be great. Seriously, though, and I'm not saying this because I'm very good friends with their family, but it really is the best pizza you've ever eaten in your life. They're always voted best pizza on Long Island, like 8 years running. They've got a few pizzerias all over Long Island, and they invented this pizza called the Grandma, and it's like a square Sicilian, but it's not as thick as Sicilian. It's a little bit thinner, but it's just absolutely amazing. It's like the best pizza you've ever tasted in your life. Every time I go home, I always make sure I get some.
You have it. Yeah. Kevin, I feel like the Giants, all the talking heads are going to take them. And, you know, they pulled this Houdini shit. And give them credit. Look, they've done it twice. They won two Super Bowls. But I just feel like eventually this whole thing of start off fast, collapse in the middle, and then, it'll be fine. We'll pull it together. Like, I feel eventually that's going to end. And it's going to end in a hideous, hideous way. And it will the entire New York media and all their fan base will go, like, DEFCON 6. So...
Oh yeah. Well, I mean, I agree. I mean, every run's going to end. It's just
is it going to start to end on Sunday though?
I want to say yes, but I just get the feeling that this is now not that, you know, it's officially not the Saints year. And now that the Redskins, you know, when the Redskins beat the Giants on Monday Night Football, they pulled within a game. And shit, the Cowboys are within a game. The Cowboys are still technically in the division race. And so now, I think now there's enough, you know, doubt and questions looming around the Giants
that I think now would be the point, would be the part where, you know, the Giants would come out, they'd beat the Saints, they'd exercise, I don't know, some kind of a demon, and sort of just say, yeah, we're still the top dog in the NFC East, and, you know, just take the lead from there and keep both the Redskins and Cowboys from getting to the postseason. I mean, I can definitely see the Giants going 3-1 or 4-0 the rest of the way. Wouldn't surprise me.
Yeah, I'm conflict. Part of me agrees with you, Kevin, and then part of me thinks that the NFC East is just meant to be a giant clusterfuck, and in order for that to happen, the Saints need to win and everybody be tied at 7-6.
I'd love that.
Yeah.
That would be amazing and ridiculous.
Dave, as far as the actual, like,
blue flag on that one.
I love your idea. I think that is maybe the best rule change that will never happen ever. It's fantastic, and like Kevin said, just the opportunities for coaches to screw it up is just, it's glorious.
But imagine the fans too, just like all the arguments that would happen, like the people having their own opinion on when they should have thrown the blue flag. Oh my God, they'd be pandemonium.
Oh, it would.
October, the flag would be pink.
Oh, and just think about this: if like the Saints were like if Joe Vitt like didn't use the blue flag against San Francisco in the first pick six, and you're like, my God, man, you can't carry the blue flags over from year to year. If we'd have had Sean Payton, he'd have threw the blue flag, Dave. He'd have threw the blue flag. Get me fired up about that. I'm excited, but. As for actual games and not hypothetical rule changes that we want to see, what scares you most about the Giants game?
That's a good question. I mean, their defense is great. Normally, I would say they play really great football late in the year and in December. I haven't really seen much of that this year. They've sort of done the opposite. But just being in New York, outdoors, cold, the stadium's bigger, stadium's louder. Otherwise, you know, their defense, the pressure that they can get with their front seven guys, I would say that's probably, you know, the biggest issue, especially with Drew playing the way he's playing. I mean, you know, he's rushing things and he got things in his, Justin Tuck in his face or whoever the hell, Umanura, whoever the hell they've got, you know, I'm worried that that's going to start forcing Drew to continue making these bad throws he's got to cut into these last few weeks.
Yeah. Kevin, how important is it that the Saints get their running game back on? How important is it that the Saints run the ball really good this week?
Very. I mean, so I kind of think, and it's funny you asked about the running game. I think I figured out the Pierre Thomas quandary, and it's one of those things that was staring. That, you know, it occurred to me like well after the fact. It was one of those so obvious, I'm an idiot, didn't see it kind of things. And it's like they didn't play him against the 49ers because they were saving him for the Falcons. I mean, they had the short turnaround. They wanted to make sure that their running backs, that they had a strong running back to go against the Falcons and to hit them. And they wanted to make sure that he was going to have a full tank of gas because they knew everybody else was going to be, you know, not with a full tank. So that's why they kept Pierre out of the game, essentially. Now, regarding, I'm sorry to be going this, you know, different direction here, but that's one of the things that I feel like this has to be said because I know I didn't hear it anywhere else, and I just...
No, that's a... God damn it, Held. That's a really, really smart opinion and take, and I wish I had thought of it because it would have made for an interesting part of a column. God damn it.
Okay, but now, did they actually go ahead and yeah, use Pierre to his fullest in the next game? I mean, well, you know, yes. And I'm not saying that Kevin's wrong. He sounds perfectly legitimate and perfectly reasonable. My question is, okay, you've gotten safe to the air and not played them during the Niners game and maybe cut off your nose to spite your face. So do they then go out in the Atlanta game and just run rough, you know, let him go nuts? No, they still limit him. Like, if you're going to save him, then let him go nuts the next game.
You can then still say, but what I'm saying is that this still plays into the whole narrative for the entire year that Pierre Thomas was underutilized. I mean, either way, Pierre Thomas is underutilized. It's just that, you know, you can take the belief that the Saints coaching staff was completely brainless and just apparently forgot he existed on the sideline and didn't put him in against the 49ers, or that they had a sort of a good idea and figured, well, we'll save him for Atlanta. And then when Atlanta comes around, he plays very well. They just didn't give him the ball enough, which, you know, has been the problem. I mean, that's really been the problem all year long, is that they never gave him the ball enough when he's playing. If you're asking what I think is going to happen, I think it's probably going to end up being more of the same. Pierre will probably get 12 touches, you know, 8 or 9 carries, 3 or 4 catches. The catches will probably be, you know, 35 yards or so, and the rushes it'll be like between 75 and 85, and everybody will say, why aren't we giving this guy more touches?
Yeah, I mean, the thing that was so perplexing in the Atlanta game is they went back to that infuriating bullshit of it's 3rd and 2 and we're running the ball like crazy, but let's go empty on 3rd and 2. That was the most, to me, it wasn't so much the amount of touches or what it was. That's the most infuriating thing with they didn't give Pierre the ball. I would have liked them to say, hey, Atlanta, guess what? It's 3rd and 2, and we're not going to fucking run Ingram. We're going to give it to Pierre on 3rd and 2. How do you like that? And I just – that was infuriating to me. Dave, let's get to this game and get predictions.
All right, yeah. I got to get going. So.
Okay. So give me a prediction how strongly you feel about the prediction, because I'm going to be in Vegas on Sunday, and I will you tell me your prediction and if I should wager, put money
What's
on your
the
prediction.
Spread?
The spread
What's
is
the spread?
The spread is Giants by 5.
I would put money on it, put money on the Saints, but I still think the Saints lose. They lose by 3. And I would say Drew's okay, but I would say it's another mismanaged game.
Yeah. Kevin, your thoughts?
Yeah, I would definitely. I tell you what, I'm going to go in the other direction. I'll say take the Giants. And I think it's a case where Eli actually ends up winning the game for him late. I think the Saints are up by a point, or maybe it's even tied, and Eli leads them down and scores a touchdown late, and that ends up sealing it. So I will say I'll go 27-20.
Yeah, I went 42-38 in my column, Giants. I think the way the 2012 season for the Saints has gone, Drew Brees plays his best game of the year, and the defense goes back to sucking. It's just like you said, it's just not the Saints' year. But on that note, gentlemen, it's been a fantastic show. For Dave, for Kevin, I'm Ralph Marlboro. Thanks for joining us, and we'll talk to you Monday. Hopefully the Saints playoff hopes will be barely alive, and they'll be 6-7.